Welcome to Sidetracked, your unofficial agency of record. I'm Emily.
And I'm Shane, and we help run Trek, a tech-driven creative services agency based in Rockford, Illinois. Trek is a full-service marketing agency, which means we do it all, and we've been around since 1995, which means we've seen it all.
In season one of Sidetracked, we'll cover everything from AI and digital advertising to branding best practices and how to stand out with print marketing.
We believe that problems are identified by the curious and solved by the courageous.
Which is why we always start with a question. Okay, today's big question, how do I succeed with print marketing? And to help us answer that question, our art director, Chris Brown, is here. Not to be confused with the other Chris Brown, artist, R&B, hip-hop, whoever that guy is. That's not
Deviant.
This Chris Brown.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, guys. How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
Excited to have you here. So the topic of print is one that I think a lot of agencies did maybe like 10, 15 years ago. There was a lot more agencies that would do print, but it's kind of been in our DNA since the beginning, being involved in the print industry, really incorporating print into our marketing for our clients. So we're excited to talk about it today. And Chris works with a lot of our clients that do a lot of print. So your perspective is really unique. I think for a lot of designers, even today in the marketing world, that you get to touch print so often. So excited to dive in. So maybe to start, we can talk about how you think about print in marketing.
Print is very important to me. When I was getting trained and going through school in the VizCom program, print was really pushed. Print was kind of everything at the time. We were at the end of like high-end design, and we were starting to transition into more digital things. And that was kind of frightening. You're learning everything. You're focusing on print, your grid systems, your techniques, your Bauhaus designers and everything. And then they give us Dreamweaver, and they tell us everything's going digital, so slice up your web pages. Everything you've learned about print design is now has to be transitioned into digital. So it was really nice, you know, finding a company like Trek. You know, we still really do focus on print, and things do happen in cycles. So I think, you know, I've been in the field for about 16 years now, and it is coming back, and I love seeing that resurgence of print, catalogs, personalized mailers, things like that. I think it's, when it's tactile, it means more to people, the recipient, and I don't think we'll ever lose that. It's a sense of caring from who you're receiving it from. It's, yes, you can have your name on an email, but I can click through that. Just having something in my hand means a lot more to me, and I think it always will. But I'm kind of a traditionalist. I enjoy that way more than a digital presence.
That's a confusing thing to tell a college kid. You spend the first couple of years learning about how to do print well, and then it's just kidding, print's dead, and then you have to transition into something else with your creative work or whatever. Did you believe them when they told you print was dead? Please tell me no.
I was hopeful. I mean, the messaging coming out of school was no, it'll never die. It came really close, but I think people, you know, quickly realized the importance. And not every single generation out there is going to be able to transition into doing everything digital. My parents don't use email. You know, they love getting catalogs still. And
wait, what? Your parents? They don't use email?
No. So they are way on the far end of the spectrum. I didn't have a computer until I was probably in eighth grade. So
yeah, I mean, my dad doesn't have internet at home.
Really?
What?
Yeah. Yeah. Like there are people out there that don't have internet, don't use email, and there's more of them than I think some digital marketers think there are.
Yeah. But I mean, we had zines back in college and things like that, and print was still, it was like an underground thing that eventually resurfaced, and I love where it's at right now. You got big corporations like Amazon that are sending out Christmas catalogs, J. Crew, L.L. Bean, Wayfair. A lot of the, it's kind of repetitive and it can get annoying, but a lot of like the food, the meal companies sending you stuff every week. And, but I still love receiving things like that with, offers and incentives, and it's personalized to my likes and my diet and things like that. So.
And they do it because it works.
It does.
Like, you know, we've talked so much already on this podcast about email open rates and how they're decreasing. And with print, you know you're going to get an open. It's going to be a really high open rate. It's going straight to their mailbox. They're more likely to open it with email open rates, you know, in the 20%. We see print open rates more in like 70, 80%. So they do it because it works.
Mm-hmm. No matter what, you have to touch it. You have to put it on your table, throw it away, take it out of your mailbox. Like, it is physically in your hands. And depending on what you do with that, I mean, impressions can last a lot longer compared to digital. It's sitting on my table because I'm interested. And we even have this thing next to the door that we keep all of our postcards and coupons and catalogs that are cool and things that we might use later on down the line. So that can easily get lost.
You're a millennial, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm about to be 40, but I am a millennial. I'm kind of at the transitional point, but I am a little more old school than most, but I love social media targeted ads, but then I especially love when I notice something and then I get something in the mail. And I think you've said that before too.
It's the combo.
Something
about the combo works really well, especially on us millennials.
Seen and understood, and like you're doing something with the information that I've given you. Like we preach multi-channel all the time, but it really doesn't happen that often. Like you still really, it stands out when you visit someone's website and then you see an ad, you're like, oh, I was just on that website. No wonder I see the ad. But then if you get a mailer, that's a whole nother element of like, an experience that you don't often have. I feel
Wait, Chris, so you mentioned zines. Did you work on zines when you were in college? And if so, can you tell us about some of them?
We did a couple projects for the art school, and then we had like a local, really small band scene. We had a thing called Middle West Fest, and we promoted with zines then. We did some different things, but you know, it was kind of a hip thing at the time, and I think, you know, I'm seeing kind of a resurgence of those here and there spread around, you know, like guerrilla marketing.
So what's a zine? What is the difference between a zine and a magazine?
So it's like handmade. It's very DIY. It's basically like, they're usually very short. They're small. It's like guerrilla marketing. So like I put together a poetry zine when I was in college. And I would print them, actually think maybe at Trek, on the Trek printers.
Part of growing up at Trek too.
Kinko's or whatever and printed there, but I did print like 100 at Trek once. And I would take them to coffee shops and leave them around. Like it was, you know, my poetry, my friend's poetry, and you're not charging for it. You're putting it out there. I mean, sometimes you would charge for it, and I see people charging for their zines now, and I've bought a few zines. But back then it was like, you'd like leave it around coffee shops because you're just really trying to get the ideas out there and you're trying to spread the word about something. Recently the Brooklyn Museum had a big exhibit about zine culture and it was really cool to see like just a bunch of old zines from like the 80s and 90s and early 2000s all in one place.
That's awesome.
So it's like the content of it is different than, so like if we're in the marketing world and someone says, I want to do a brochure that's just a small brochure, you know, that's not a zine because the content of a zine is something that you want to digest. Or how is it different than like a marketing pamphlet or a brochure in terms of like a piece of print? Like what's different?
I'd say it's more creative. It is poetry, it's artwork, it's events, it's, you know, it's meant for, you know, students in many ways and people in a certain society or interest. But yeah, definitely instead of
like
more,
a certain
less
culture, subculture,
more showcasing.
And it's often like really collage-y. You'll often see collages in zines because it'll be like you make a collage and then you photocopy it. And that's how you're creating the zine.
I do know what zines are, but it's not something that, that everyone would know about as even as a marketing channel, you know, like zines are a marketing channel.
Exactly. I was recently in a bookstore, actually in Rockford, Maze Books in Rockford, and they have a like a retail display with a bunch of zines that you can buy. And somebody walked up and said, zines. And I was like, I've never heard someone say that before. And yeah, not everybody knows what it is, but it's really cool that, like, you know, you can buy them in bookstores now.
That is cool.
So how does your process change, Chris, from... you mentioned like in school, the transition from getting used to designing for print and then having to transition that into designing for digital. So like, how does your process change when you know that you're designing for a printed piece versus when you're designing for like something that's like a website or an ad or something that will only live digitally? Does your process change at all, or how does it change?
Yes, it definitely does. I think I, you know, it's all kind of subconscious, but I think that I check out and evaluate all of the elements that go into these things, like what's the goal? What's the audience? What's the mood? Imagery, fonts, paper, color palette. What kind of message are you trying to do? What's the directive? Where do you want them to go? With print... You know, you have different fonts. You have some limitations when it comes to digital. You know, paper can evoke an emotion. The way the image is treated can evoke an emotion. Fonts put out different vibes and things like that. Digital, you're dealing with a brighter, more open-ended color palette. You're not limited by CMYK. So it's, you can go a different route. We obviously have dimensions that are different. A lot of social are 1-1 or 4-3, or 4-5, but you know, as opposed to like a postcard or a brochure or a catalog, I guess, you know, there are a lot of different things that you could take a look at. And, I guess, yeah, it just kind of depends on who your client is, you know, what you're trying to achieve with it. And that kind of, you know, develops the form factor and where you're going to go with the print piece. Usually with digital stuff, we have a clear directive and we have dimensions and we have something that we absolutely need to accomplish it, because it's going to be on screen. With print, you're a little more open-ended and you can change things up a bit, I'd say.
So I like what you said, like the paper itself is like a consideration in the design process because it's like the medium that it's, you know, being used to produce this piece. And so it's kind of like thinking about, for like if you're designing a website, you're thinking about the whole user experience, but in a different way because it's so one-dimensional. But then if you are working on a print piece, you have to think about the experience as a whole, like a more rounded experience of like, what is this paper going to feel like? How is what I'm seeing on the screen going to translate into CMYK when it interacts with the paper? Is that color going to be the same or is that type, to your point? Yeah, exactly. Is that type going to be too thin where you're not going to be able to read it or, you know, those kinds of things. So that's definitely interesting. I think that's an art in and of itself, designing for print and thinking about the print experience.
Yes, it's, and you're kind of limited too. You don't want to do overkill on print. I mean, you want to make the message efficient, concise. You want to be able to glance at it and exactly know exactly what it is. I mean, you can have words and words and words and pages of words on a website, on emails. But yeah, you're kind of limited when it comes to the amount of content that you have in a print piece.
And the way that the content and the design work together is a really fun part for me. I remember, Chris, you and I worked on a folding mailer one time that it was going to fold. I don't exactly remember what the fold was, but it was going to fold in such an interesting way
that I actually had to make a little mock-up of it with paper and figure out, okay, what's on the back and when it folds, like what piece of content are you going to see then? And as the person's unfolding. Yeah, I think it was a rolling fold. And
oh, like the 9-panel brochure?
Yes, a 9-panel brochure with a rolling fold. Like, and I wanted it to work so that as they unfolded it, they got a story bit by bit. But also when it was fully unfolded, the back made sense and the front made sense. So you could read it two different ways. And that was such a like puzzle to figure out that I actually had to like mock it up and do everything by hand first before I put it on the computer so I could send you the Google Doc so that you could design it. I think that's one of my favorite things about working with print.
That was cool. There's a lot of back and forth on that because I think we had different form factors because we were making our own and our little mock-ups. And I think when you came to the office, we finally figured it out. But yes. Yeah, that was a fun one. That was cool. It worked out really well, I think.
Yeah.
Shane, that's one way your process changes, but like, how does your process change if you know you're writing for print versus digital or does it?
It definitely does. I mean, so to Chris's point, you have a finite number of words that you can fit on that print piece. And for me, I'm always trying to get my word count down, whether it's print or digital, because I know nobody's going to read a super long email either. or, you know, on website, like I like to think in terms of micro copy, whether I'm doing print or digital, like what's the little bit of information that they need to know at this point. But yes, working with print, I will often actually like take a piece of copy paper and just work things out on the piece of paper first, so that I know how much space I'm dealing with, because I'm not really a spatial thinker. A lot of designers are. I'm totally not. So I have to force myself to think that way.
And you kill it too. I mean, it's always the perfect amount of words. You never have to adjust.
Thanks. I am also a big print reader, so I think that helps too. Because like I read a lot of magazines, I read a lot of books. I have a pretty good sense of how many words can fit in a little space. It's always a challenge. It's a fun challenge.
I have one more question for you too. And that is, as different seasons, budgets change and print is, I think part of the reason print has declined as a marketing channel in the past has been because you have to pay to print it and mail it out in some cases, which adds an additional expense that you don't have with more digital channels. Like once you design a website, you just hit publish and it's there. So there's not that added cost. Well, we know there is because you have to maintain it and blah, blah. But why is print justified as a valid marketing channel in 2025?
The return on print spend is huge. And this is why these companies keep coming back to it. Even if it goes out of vogue for a little while, they're going to come back because the ROI is so good on print. So we'll link to this article, but NerdWallet put out a study with some direct mail statistics, and they said for every $167 that marketers spend on print in the U.S., they capture over $2,000 in sales. So that's about a 1,300% return on your investment. Like you said, they're hitting costs to digital marketing too. Like a website is not free. you do have to pay to maintain it, to update it. And websites, you know, we tell our clients like a website's probably good for about 5 years. Like you're maintaining it that whole time as well, but then you're going to need a new one like in a couple of years too. And that can get really pricey. So people think of, you know, email and website marketing as free. It's definitely not. And it doesn't have as good a return on investment as print, especially for industries like retail.
So many print campaigns are pushing you towards digital, though, with their, you know, incentives, offers. how they're going to, you know, capture those leads with forms. And as much as I dislike them sometimes, QR codes are such a huge piece, especially after COVID. They're finding out different ways to use them, and we can track them. So a lot of pieces that we design have a lot of QR codes on them, and that's not the designer's, you know, best friend, but they are super useful.
Our hack is flow code. Flow code is a way to make it a little bit nicer looking. Still a QR code, but.
But everyone's using them now on TV commercials and things like that. I see so many flow codes.
And to your point, like the channels work best together. So I'll link to another study in the show notes. But there was one study that found that pairing direct mail with an abandoned cart email doubled the reactivation on the abandoned cart email. So you can just send an abandoned cart email. You're going to get some of those people back. Or you can also send them a postcard. Send them the email and the postcard, and you'll get double the reactivation. They're really powerful together. Like we said, we, you know, as millennials, we love it when we're getting the email and the direct mail.
Yeah, it works. That is true. I know I'm going to end up online, but I love print.
Yes, yes.
I want to start with print. That's how you get me.
Why do you hate QR codes?
I don't hate, I don't know. It's a code, you know. I'm a designer. I think about design more than marketing. And so I understand that there's a nice pairing there and a nice relationship. But QR codes aren't the prettiest things.
Okay, so it's purely aesthetic. You don't like the way they look.
Yes, it's an eyesore to me. But yeah. I trust in them, and I use them all the time.
We've said, so far, we've said, thinking about it from the beginning of the design, content, creative stages, so that you are planning for the whole end user experience of that print piece. We've talked about using it in combination with other channels like email, website interactions, ad interactions, whatever that might be. So what else?
Okay, we talked a little bit about paper, but I'm going to say spend a little more money on the nice paper. Like, go heavier with the paper. Get a paper that has like a really nice feel to it, or maybe put a coating on the paper so it stands out in the mail. When I get a really nice piece of mail, I am so much more likely to open it and see what they have to say to me, because they obviously, you know, spent time and money and intention to send this piece to me, compared to when you just kind of get like a flimsy, lightweight postcard in the mail. It's much more, it's easier to just recycle it and not think about it, compared to like a really heavy, nice print piece.
Yeah, I would say, I don't know, just the biggest thing for me is make it personal. It's an introduction. You're introducing me to either your company or something you're going to give me or want to know about me. I think just the personal aspect is more successful across the board.
Mine is probably not a surprise because I've said it multiple times on this podcast, but if you're going to do it well. And give it the effort and the time that it deserves. Like when you send an email that hasn't been proofed, and we haven't even talked about the proofing aspect of doing print marketing. But if you're not gonna do it well, take the time to do press proofs, to look at the quality of the print. Interact with your print partners, to ask questions, to get it to the place that you are happy with it, then don't do it at all. Because just as I get bad emails and I'm like, no, I'm not going to open this email, or I'm not going to buy from you because this is a terrible email. It's the same thing with mailers and or even brochures. If I get a brochure and like words are cut off because it was, you know, the die cut was off for some reason, you know, and it's trimmed, or if the text is, or the background is like purple on one page, but then it looks blue on another page because the print isn't consistent. If you're not like actively engaged in making it like a really good piece, then don't do it, because doing print poorly is just not worth the extra budget.
Yeah. Or if the design is bad, like work with a real designer.
Yeah.
Yes.
It is worth the investment.
Canva designs do not print well. Do not try it on your own.
I think that's something we take for granted, you know, do it well, execute. And we have, it touches every team in our building, you know. It goes through proof. It goes through multiple designers to say, hey, that's not looking great, and this is going to be more effective. I think we're really good at that here, and it's a great point that we often forget about. We just do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, this problem solved is for a project that we worked on for one of our clients, and they needed to showcase what was possible with print and provide inspiration to their customers and their customers about what the whole marketing flow with print materials could look like. So we do these occasionally, and we call them vertical segment kits that kind of showcase a particular vertical and the print samples that could apply to that vertical. And in this case, it was a food service company, a meal delivery company. Chain, is that what you call it?
Yes, we were inspired by, you know, Blue Apron and all of those. HelloFresh.
Meal delivery.
Yeah.
Cooking.
Except
kind
the
of
difference.
Thing.
Yeah. Because the fun thing about kits like this is we get to come up with like a brand from scratch. And so the difference with this brand was that you would get your meal delivery kit, and then you would log on to like a live kind of cooking show with a chef, and you would all cook together. So in all of the pieces, like that was the flow. It was like, you know, letting them pick out their meals and then reminding them to log on and come to this like cooking party. And then there were like celebrity chefs and DJs. I think there was a DJ component to it in the
story.
we kind of go crazy with these a little bit because it's just really fun.
Because we
like,
can.
You can. Yeah. You know, the brand is never going to exist. It's purely to show what can be done. And the other thing we were trying to demonstrate is what personalized print can really look like. So not just first name, last name, but different people getting different imagery based on their demographics. So if, you know, this piece is going to maybe like an older couple, it's showing pictures of other older couples cooking in their kitchen together. If it's going to a young single person, it's showing like a young person with all of their roommates cooking together, just showing how much you really can vary when you have a little bit of data about your target audience.
And use digital printing.
Exactly.
Versus traditional printing. So it was a very interesting set of samples. And then Chris designed the logo for our fake brand called Open Kitchen, and then all of the samples as well. So Chris, you want to talk about what went into that and just tell us a little bit about some of the cool print applications there?
Oh man, I have to look back. It was multi-touch point. We sent a brochure. No, we sent postcards to begin with, didn't we? And I think it went all the way through. We had menus. And then we ended up with something that was kind of like a zine, Shane, with like the DJ in there. It was
like an artist showcase, a little like quarterly magazine,
a featured class. You know, it was really cool.
There was also a recipe booklet that had detachable recipe cards that were stuck on with like spots of glue.
Yeah,
and it was they were like synthetic cards, so that if they got wet while you were cooking, it would wick off.
Exactly.
It wouldn't.
And it was really time appropriate.
Absorb.
Because Zoom was becoming such a huge thing. And everyone was...
It was like COVID.
It was a COVID era thing.
So everybody's online. Everyone's doing everything via Zoom. And we said, why not a cooking class? And I'm really kind of upset that we never followed through with like making this an actual company. But it was...
I know, right, guys? Let's just go. Yeah, you can have our idea. You can have our idea for free. Go make this cooking company.
Yeah.
This was a fun one. And it won a bunch of awards. And one of the awards that it won was the... At the Print Awards in 2022, it won the Sappy Best Use of Paper Award. It was printed on Sappy paper, most of the pieces. And that was a really fun one that we were really proud of because, like Emily said, we do a lot in the print and paper spaces. So to win the Best Use of Paper Award was very exciting.
Yeah. And that's something I think that's unique to us. You know, these vertical kits, we're showcasing a press's capabilities and our capabilities instead of an offer or something, you know, tangible. It's just a really cool portfolio piece that I think will rock for a while.
Mm-hmm. It was, so listing out the samples here of everything that was in the box, because I think that would be helpful, or in the mm-hmm. kit.
Yes. So it was meant to show a customer's journey from awareness through post-purchase. So it started with a launch announcement brochure that was a bifold. Then they would get a recipe booklet, and the recipe booklet had detachable recipe cards. And then they would get a post-purchase postcard with a referral coupon, and that was supposed to come, you know, after their first meal kit. And then there was a quarterly newsletter that was like a little magazine, and that was to keep this existing customer engaged and excited about the brand.
Love it.
Yeah.
I also have vivid memories of Shane. You were like, what am I supposed to do for these recipes? Do I just make something up? And I was like, I don't know, like do a little research, combine a bunch of them. And I now know what kanji is because of Open Kitchen and Shane.
Yeah, I ended up just doing a bunch of my favorite foods and kind of like creating my own recipes. So no promises that any of these recipes will actually go well in the kitchen. I'm not the best cook in the world, but yes, I do love kanji. And so I made sure there was a kanji recipe in there.
I also did learn a lot about your dishes. And I just have to say it was kind of hard sourcing some of those photos.
Oh, so sorry.
That's okay. I think I went up to you. I was like, I can't find this. Can we do something else?
I think we did. Yeah, we might have actually replaced the kanji. It's hard to find photos, stock photos of rice porridge.
Oh, yeah. The cool thing about that, too, was there were so many different, like, personal aspects of it that we use variable data for. And I think one, like, the promo code postcard was even personalized to them. I think we used the okay for Open Kitchen and then like their name. It was like, okay, Walt, use this code or as a referral code or whatever it was on the website. But yeah, it was kind of cool just to show how dialed in we can get with each person.
Yeah, like personalized promo codes, personalized URLs, like mm-hmm. those little things that you might not think of. Yeah, instead of just like a random generated number, work the person's name in there, and it's just that extra little touch of personalization, and it's totally possible. It's mm-hmm. not like, it's not that people don't do it because it's not possible, it's that they didn't think of it.
Yeah.
I think we also had like a set of like maybe it showed like four recipe cards and we had like six, and there was like a vegetarian. Like if we knew they were vegetarian, there was like the vegetarian versions and then there was like the meat versions. So even like those little things of demonstrating a knowing of someone and their preferences, which in this instance, that company would have had, mm-hmm. you know, that's one of the things you would ask is like, do you have any diet restrictions or meal preferences, you know? And then using that in the experience as well kind of furthers that point. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Chris. It's been a lot of fun.
It has been. Thank you so much for having me again.
Fun fact,
Sidetracked is the name of the bar inside Trek, where it's not uncommon to find a copywriter and a designer brainstorming a new project, an account manager hosting a client for happy hour, and our creative director and head mixologist, Mike Wilson, mixing up something fun.
In this season of Sidetracked, Mike's making his way through a 1970s cocktail recipe book, and we volunteered to be his taste testers.
Mike's at the bar, and he made us a drink.
What'd you make us, Mike?
I made you both Addingtons.
Addingtons, sounds so fancy.
Yes, not much to it, though. It is sweet red vermouth, dry white vermouth, club soda, and a lemon twist on the rocks.
Mmm, it's beautiful.
All right. The bubbles.
Okay, let's try it. I wanted to like this one. It's fine. It's not for me.
Okay.
I don't know about this mixing of sweet and dry vermouth. I don't know.
Must have been a 70s thing.
My NA version is fabulous.
Mm.
So probably a 3 out of 5, maybe 3.5. But it's also just a little bit... You can't drink very much of it.
I'm going to give this a 2. It's just kind of bitter.
All right.
Actually, it's growing on me. Wait. Okay, it's getting better. I like it with every sip, more and more.
All right.
Okay. I'm going to upgrade you to a 3 out of 5.
Awesome.
Oh, wow. This might be the first time we've ever agreed on a score.
Well, cheers.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks for joining us. If you like this episode of Sidetracked, rate and review it, share it with a friend, subscribe, all of the above. Learn more about us at Trek.com.
Sidetracked is a production of Trek. Our producer is Nick Grove. Our production manager is Sean Burke. Our content editor is Nick Ostick, and our design lead is Mike Wilson. So one more thing, I think that Shopify needs to put out a catalog because they have all of the data on all the stores that I've bought from that use Shopify, and they're using it in their shop app. So I can log into the app and see all of the stores that have Shopify that I've bought from. Why haven't they put out a catalog yet?
They put it in the shop app, but they don't put it in print.
They need to get on this. I hope so. So if you work at Shopify, please start putting out a catalog. I want that catalog.
Love it.
Bye.
All right, bye.